Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A tremendous Thursday to you. It's July the 14th. I can't believe we're almost halfway through July 2022. It's Cale Clark Show, and happy to be talking to you. Here's some digits for you to call. 888-914-9149. If you want to get in on the phone lines, it's a good time to do it. Right off the top, 888-914-9149. And of course, you can always email your thoughts and show ideas to Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Or you can tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. But once again, that number, 888-914-9149. And Nick Senevich is on the phones today, the sentient one. He'll be picking. He actually sent me some show ideas today. So you can do it too. Once again, that email, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Lots of great stuff coming up today. We'll check in on our British Open picks later on, just very, very quickly. I'll take a peek at the leaderboard because we made it some pretty daring calls yesterday. Hopefully you didn't go to the Vegas odds makers with those ones. But a lot of people treat investing as a sport, don't they? It's just a big competition. How are your stocks doing? Well, a lot of you guys are in the red. You're worried about, now, this is a serious topic. Given the state of the economy right now, you're worried about your financial future. You're worried about your hopefully future retirement plans. And numbers are in the red. There's blood on Wall Street, okay? And people are getting very, very nervous. Well, I'm going to be sharing later how an insight from the sport of soccer. Now, I know outside of the United States, they call it football. Football is life, you know, like on Ted Lasso. But I don't know. The only real football is played in the National Football League and in college football, too. We know that. So I still call it soccer. And so, sorry, football fans, I'm calling it soccer. But if you've ever seen soccer penalty kicks, like there's a great penalty shootout in the European Championships in 2020. It often happens that big games, even in the World Cup, are decided by penalty kicks, even championship games. And you know how a goalie has to kind of guess which side to dive onto because he just doesn't have time. The net's so big. Well, an insight from how goalies try to save penalty kicks can actually maybe save your financial future. I'm going to tell you about that later on. Plus, do you remember the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks? Remember that volleyball, the Wilson volleyball that kind of became a character in the film? And he called it Wilson, and that was his companion as he's stranded on a desert island. Well, there was a real life castaway who was saved by a real life Wilson. I'm not kidding. It's an incredible story. I'll share that with you later in the program. But first, we're going to tip off the Cale Clark Show. We're going to take you back to school a little bit. Going to take you back to math class. That's not exactly a great memory for many of you. I know I was terrible at math. Math was not my strong suit by any stretch of the imagination. I was bad. Why bother learning all this stuff? I mean, that's why we have calculators, right? Well, here's a question. Does 2 plus 2 equal God? Does 2 plus 2 equal God? Well, what am I talking about? I'm talking about how truths from any field, like math, can actually point us to the supernatural. Well, here's what I'm talking about. I read a really cool article about this, which was written by Dr. Vern Poitras, who is a biblical scholar and theologian. He actually went to Harvard, got his PhD from Harvard, so he's a smart guy. And with his Harvard mouth, he's extended us some courtesy. That's a very obscure A Few Good Men reference, but I digress quite a bit there. But this is a really cool article that he wrote about this whole topic. It was called Truth Was Made in the Image of God. And he wrote this in Crossway on their website. And he talked about how we can, first of all, look at a mathematical truth, such as 2 plus 2 equals 4. I do know the answer to that. I did get that right in school. I wasn't sick the day they taught that in school. But when you think about that, the fact that 2 plus 2 equals 4, that's a truth that's true everywhere at all times throughout the universe. Now, we live in a world that tries to deny the existence of truth. Now, ultimately, we as Catholics know that truth is a person, the person of Jesus Christ. Truth is a person. It's not an abstract concept. Now, you remember in John chapter 18, when Jesus was standing, he was on trial for his life before Pontius Pilate. And that it's a classic conversation that took place between Jesus and Pilate in John chapter 18. It says, Pilate entered the praetorium again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingship is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight that I might not be handed over to the Jews, but my kingship is not from the world." Now, of course, Jesus is Jewish too. He's talking about the Jewish religious authorities. Pilate said to him, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth? What is truth?" And that is exactly the question of postmodern men and women today. What is truth? And then, of course, you know what happens. Pilate goes out to the crowd and says, "I find no crime in him, but you have a custom that I should release a prisoner to you on the Passover." And they're like, "We want Barabbas. We want Barabbas." "Oh, you don't want the king of the Jews?" "No, we want Barabbas." And so they pleaded for this murderer, this insurrectionist, to be released to them. Now, of course, the great irony here is that the name Barabbas, we talked about names in Roman Palestine earlier, a few days ago. Barabbas means son of Abba. Son of the Father. Wow, they picked the wrong son of the Father. They picked Barabbas, not Jesus, the true son of the Father. So anyways, we know what happens after that, the passion, the death, the resurrection of Christ. But truth is a person. And we're going to get into that more later, but let's stick with the concept of truth here. Now remember that Pope Benedict XVI, he said that we live in kind of this post truth society, a society that tries to deny the existence of truth, the truth of the human person. We see this played out in all kinds of spheres, gender dysphoria, notably so. Timory talks about that quite a bit on her show. The dictatorship of relativism. The dictatorship of relativism. That was a key line from Pope Benedict XVI. And he called it, this idea of relativism is the concept that there is no truth, that there is no truth. There is no objective truth that everybody must adhere to. There's just his truth, her truth. Truth is subjective. That's the concept. And what's more, it's a dictatorship of relativism, meaning that if you don't believe that, if you don't believe there's no truth, you're going to be persecuted somehow for this. The powers that be are going to come for you. Now, what's ultimately so ironic about this, of course, is even the statement, "there is no truth," is a truth statement. You can't get away from this concept of truth. People who say that believe that it's true. So it's not possible to deny truth in reality, but people try. People do try. So let's get back to this mathematical example that Dr. Vern Poitras tries to point out. He said, look, okay, if you take 2 plus 2 equals 4, that's true everywhere. It's true at all times. Its truth does not change over time. So truth actually has three key attributes. Any truth that you want to propose has three key attributes. Number one, omnipresence. Omnipresence. So if something is true, like 2 plus 2 equals 4, it's true everywhere. Omnipresent. Truth is also everlasting. 2 plus 2 equals 4 has always been true at all times, in all places, in all cultures throughout the world. So it's everlasting. And number three, it's unchangeable. It's unchangeable. And in other words, another way of saying unchangeable is it's immutable. Immutable. And it's very much like Jesus Christ himself. Once again, in the book of Hebrews, it says Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Never changes. So all truth is omnipresent. It's everywhere present. It's everlasting through all times, and it's unchanging. It's immutable. Now, what's interesting too is that Poitras actually points out that this concept of unchangeability or immutably, that's more than just it doesn't change. It's not just that truth doesn't change, but truth cannot change. Truth cannot change. It's impossible for the truth to change. So these three things about truth, interestingly enough, they're also attributes of God. God is omnipresent everywhere. He's also everlasting through all times, and he's also unchangeable. And that's very, very similar to what it says in the letter to the Hebrews. I think it's Hebrews 7:14, if my memory serves me correctly. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. God is also omnipresent, everlasting, and unchangeable, just like truth. Now, we know that God is love. Now, we read this, of course. Now, speaking of Pope Benedict, one of his encyclicals, his universal letters to the church, was called Deus Caritas Est. And papal letters are always, the titles of them are always the first couple words in Latin, in the Latin version. So he started off this letter with Deus Caritas Est, which is God is love. And that comes to us, of course, from the first letter of John in a couple of different places. But one place is John, 1 John 4:16, God is love. Now, we know that God is love, but God is also truth. God is also truth. Remember what I said in the beginning, truth is a person. So we got to always remember that as well. And Dr. Vern Poitras also points this out too, that truth is eternal. Truth is eternal. This is sort of to deal with this whole concept of everlasting. The truth is everlasting throughout all time. Truth is eternal. Now, God, God is outside of time. He does act in time, but he created time and space. He is superior to it. He's eternal. He's outside of all that realm. But he does create it. He is involved with it. And so it gets really interesting when you look at the activity of the incarnate word in history. And he calls it, in his article, he calls it tensed truths. And he's like, okay, if you look at math again, 2 + 2 = 4, it's a special mathematical truth. It's he calls it a different mathematical truth because it doesn't need to specify any moment in time. 2 + 2 = 4 is true all the time, everywhere, in all places. But what about when we're thinking about stuff that's in the creed? For example, stuff that does have a time frame attached to it. When the creed tells us that Jesus Christ suffered under Pontius Pilate. There's a time frame there. Now, we know that Pontius Pilate, I mean, I remember when I was a kid going to Mass, maybe this happened to you too, when we would say the creed at Mass, you know, he suffered under Pontius Pilate. I actually thought Pontius Pilate was a guy who flew planes, you know, Pontius Pilate, you know, I don't know, did he fly a propeller plane like Snoopy, you know, the Red Baron, or what's the story here? And of course, I figured out, no, he's a Roman governor. But we know that the name Pontius Pilate, it grounds the account of Christ and his life in a specific, not only historical time, but geographical time as well. It's the first century in Jerusalem. And we know that Pilate was the prefect there. And by the way, if you go to the Holy Land, and maybe you're going on the Relevant Radio trip with Drew Mariani this year, maybe one day you'll get to go with me. You know, maybe that's not a good, maybe that's a something you might not want to do, but when I take people there, I always take people to the Israel Museum in Jerusalem. It's one of the finest museums in the world. And there's this corner of the museum. It's called the Jesus of Nazareth exhibit. It's incredible. And there are actual physical artifacts from the time of Christ, the bone box of Caiaphas, the high priest, those bones were buried in. There's a heel bone of a crucified man who was crucified like Jesus under the reign of Pontius Pilate. And then there's the famous Pontius Pilate stone. There's actual evidence in stone of the existence of Pilate, because some people wanted to say that Pilate never existed. Well, now we have it in stone. Yeah, he was a real guy. And he was the prefect of Judea. It actually gave us some insight into his title. A lot of people say, oh, he's a procurator. He's actually a prefect. But it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. He's a real guy. He's a real guy. The fact that Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, that's a past tense word, right? He suffered at some point in history in the past, before the time in which we live now. So some people say, okay, this idea about the suffering of Christ, it's not an eternal truth. It's a tensed truth. It's about a particular event in time and in a specific place, never to be repeated. But we can talk about whether or not this actual event happened. Yes, it did. It did happen. The crucifixion of Jesus is well attested in history. And the fact that it happened continues to be true for the rest of history, and it also impacts all times, the past and the future, which is really intriguing, and that kind of blows my mind too. But that's another aspect of truth, this whole idea of tensed truth in a specific time and place. What about truth that will happen, that's predicted by God? Talking about prophecy. Earlier today on the Faith Explained program, we kind of concluded off our series on Jehovah's Witnesses, the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, that's their official name, talked about all their failed prophecies throughout the ages. They claim to be the mouthpiece of God on earth. Well, if you're really God's prophet on earth, God's organ for communicating truth, why are you getting so many prophecies wrong about the end of the world, this, that, and the other thing, all kinds of different things? The test of a prophet is whether or not the prophecies come true. But think about how God pre-planned, as part of his plan of salvation, the crucifixion of Christ. Look what it says in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 18 to 20. You were ransomed from futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things like silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like a lamb without blemish or spot. He was foreknown before the foundation of the world. In other words, this was planned out ahead of time, but was made manifest in the last times for the sake of you. And of course, there's so many other places in the New Testament where it talks about this. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 9, St. Paul writes that he saved us and called us to a holy calling, not because of our works, not because of what we did, but because of his own purpose and grace, which he gave us in Christ Jesus before the ages began. It's part of God's plan all along. What about Acts chapter 4, verses 27 and 28? Apostolic preaching here. For truly in this city, Peter says, there were gathered together against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate. You know, they were gathered against him, along with the Gentiles and the peoples of Israel, to do whatever your hand and your plan had predestined to take place. So this prayer to God, now you had predestined this, that this was going to happen. So that's really intriguing, that whole passage, because it also references Psalm 2. Psalm 2 was written, it's a Psalm of David, it was written 1,000 years before the time of Christ. And Peter uses Psalm 2 when he's preaching about Jesus to talk about the future resurrection of Christ, that God would not let his body see decay. So when the time came, God allowed Christ to suffer under the hand of Pontius Pilate. This was always true in God's plan, but it had to act. It was as good as done because he pre-planned it, but it actually had to be carried out in time. So that's part of truth as well. The truth that will happen, the truth that will have. There's truth that's true all the time. It's immutable. It's eternal. It is absolutely fixed. It's unchangeable, like these mathematical truths, but there's also truth that is prophesied. And when God says it's going to happen, it is as good as done. Think about the prophet Micah in the Old Testament, Micah chapter 5, verse 2. He predicts that the Messiah, prophesies that the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem, and that actually did happen. Now, he was writing in the 8th century before Christ, hundreds of years before the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. So this is part of the unchanging plan of God, his fixed purpose. And God always kind of acts the same way throughout history. This is the whole thing of typology. Like Mark Twain said, you know, history doesn't always repeat itself, but boy, it sure does rhyme. The way God acts in the Old Testament is the same way he acts in the New. People, places, things, how Mary is the Ark of the New Covenant. Jesus is the second Adam. This is all over the place. Mary's the new Eve. This is typology at work. Events in past salvation history tipping us off to future things that are going to happen at the time of Christ. All right, so let's finish off here by talking about this question of, is truth really personal? Now, I already kind of gave you the answer to this because I said truth is a person. It's the person of Christ. God is truth. But some people try to say, no, truth is not personal. They try to say that, oh, all of that sort of stuff, it's just abstractions. It's kind of just in the ether, just kind of ideas out there. But truth has to be personal because truth is also rational. Truth is also rational. And this is one of the things that the author of this piece, Dr. Vern Poitras, he says, is that rationality belongs to persons, not rocks, not even to animals, right? Animals operate by instinct, but not by reason. And we need faith and reason. You know, like that was JP2's, one of his big encyclicals, Fides et Ratio, faith and reason, like two wings. We need them both to fly in life. And so truth is personal. It's rational. This guy, Dr. Verne, says truth is language-like. It's like a language. Because there are many truths that are complex at times, and it's like language. Language is complex at times, and it's how we communicate things. And so even the ability to deal with truth, to understand truth, only persons can understand truth. Animals can't do it. Rocks can't do it. So this is what the God of the Bible is all about. God is a personal God, not only in the Trinity, in himself, three persons, one God, the relationship of the persons of the Trinity, but you could say the truth, in a sense, is another name for God. If John said God is love, we could also say God is truth. Jesus actually did say that, by the way, in John 14:6. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. In John 3:33, John actually writes, God is true. God is truth. So this is what it's all about. Because God exists, truth also exists. We have to understand that. But we can also, as Dr. Verne Poitras says, we can also move backwards a little bit. We could move in reverse. Because truth exists, God also must exist. Because God is the truth. You can go back from this concept of truth to God. And this is really important because when we're trying to evangelize other people, when we're trying to share the gospel with people, we can work from this concept of truth because we should be able to get people to understand the concept of truth. Even if they say that they're relativists and they say they don't believe in truth, they actually do. Because when they say that, again, that's a truth statement when they say there's no truth. So we should be able to get past that. We can go back from truth to God. No, just to be clear, truth is not something behind God. Truth is not something more ultimate than God, as Dr. Verne Poitras says. It's not like that's the original link in the chain, and then we go ahead to God. No. God is the last thing back in the chain. He is the first cause. He is the unmoved mover. He is the ultimate origin. So truth exists in God. It's not something outside of God. Truth is God. God is truth. So, wow, it kind of blows your mind. And he says it's kind of related to this concept of God being simple. Some people say God is simplicity, the ultimate simplicity. And it doesn't mean that God is simple to understand or anything like that. It's quite complex, right? People have struggled with concepts like the Trinity. But what that means when we say God is simple, it means he's not made up of different parts. We can't divide him into truth here and love here. No. He's not composite. He is one. God is one. Just like a pencil is a composite item, right? So anyways, well, actually, no, a pencil is a bad example because you can break up the pencil into the lead, the eraser, whatever. You can't do that with God. You can't do that. He's immaterial. So, whew, now I might be blowing your mind here. This article certainly blew my mind, I'll tell you. But we can use this when we evangelize because truth is present in everybody's life, even if they don't explicitly acknowledge that. Even if they don't explicitly acknowledge God or truth, they live by it every day. When they try to convince you of something, they think it's true. So that's the challenge for us, to try to get past that surface, to understand that all truth is in God. As Paul wrote to the Romans, people try to suppress the truth through their sinful ways and the way that they reject the created order, the way they reject God. Read Romans chapter 1. It's pretty powerful. And we need to pray, of course, that the Holy Spirit will change their hearts because really it's only the Spirit that can open people's minds sometimes to this truth. And we try to explain it, but we also need God's grace to draw people in. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Whew, covered a lot of ground there, but we'll be right back. 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values. And fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com. Hey, welcome back to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-914. Now, why are we playing this song? The ole, 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 ole. It's a soccer song, right? Well, I'm going to talk to you about how you can save. You can make a great save on your financial portfolio in these troubling times. And what it has to do with soccer, I'll explain that in just a second. But a lot of you are worried about the markets. You're worried about all kinds of things, gas prices, inflation. Wow, inflation hit over 9%. I think they were predicting it would be something like 8.8% in the U.S., but inflation was over 9% last month, 9.1%. So, whew, I'm sure you're not getting a 9% raise, you know, on a regular basis, right? So life is getting more expensive. You try to keep up with it as best you can, but people are worried. People are worried about their retirement portfolios, maybe dipping down. You've been seeing some red. The charts aren't looking good. Well, here's what you need to know in these troubling times. And by the way, I'm going to preface this by saying this is my legal disclaimer here. This is not, and I repeat, not financial advice. I am not a financial advisor. I am not a portfolio manager. I'm not a stockbroker, nor do I play one on the radio. I'm trying to learn all about this stuff too, just like you. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but it does affect us, right? And Jesus talked a lot about finances as well. He talked a lot about money and the spiritual life, and he talked a lot about money matters because money matters. It really does. It's something, it's part of stewardship. It's part of what God has entrusted us with. And I read an interesting piece by this guy named Doug Rowat, who's a finance guy. He is an actual finance guy. He's legit. He's a portfolio manager with Turner Investments in Toronto. Works on Bay Street, which is kind of the Canadian version of Wall Street. And he said that he got an email from one of his clients, whose name was Susan, regarding her financial portfolio, which he manages. And she said, quote, "It would be very helpful to know, Doug, if anything is being done to at least curtail the bleeding." Now, what are you doing about this? There's blood on the street. There's blood on Wall Street. I'm in the red here. I'm seeing red. In other words, okay, this is torture just watching what's happening in the markets here. You've got to do something. You've got to do something. And then he said, you know, that actually got me thinking about soccer. That got me thinking about soccer, specifically penalty kicks. It's one of the most exciting things about a soccer game. If you've ever watched the World Cup, which is coming to North America in just a few years, but this year later on in 2022, it's going to be played in Qatar. And penalty kicks, it's so exciting. Perhaps you saw the latest big soccer championship that was decided by a penalty shootout was in the 2020 European Championships when Italy defeated England on their home soil at Wembley Stadium in London. Here's a clip from the last kick in the penalty shootout. Italy's Bukayo Saka, who was only 19 years old, just a young kid, really, he had the whole weight of the world on his shoulders, at least the weight of England, as he was lining up for the penalty kick to keep England alive. If he missed it, the game was over, and the Italian keeper, Gianluigi Donnarumma. Here it is.
It's the teenager. Bukayo Saka, one of the youngest players ever to play in the European Championship. He's got to score here to keep England alive. And he doesn't! And Italy are champions of Europe! They do it in a shootout. They did it the hard way. Behind after 2 minutes. Ahead after penalties.
Yeah, you can hear the crowd booing because, you know, it was in London, and unfortunately this poor kid got a lot of abuse after that match. And but the Italian goalkeeper Donnarumma made the big save. He guessed right, because when you're a goalie, right, the net is so huge, and when the penalty shootout happens, the kicker, the shooter, is 11 meters. It's about 36 feet away from the net, and the net just looks enormous. And it is big. And so there's no way the goalie can react in time. So he usually tries to guess one way or the other. He dives towards one end of the net or the other, left or right. You've probably seen this before. And so it was no different in that shootout. Italy won 3-2. They won the Euros. I don't know what was more shocking, Italian football winning the Euros, or they missed the World Cup this year. They're not there, which is also bizarre, but they didn't make it. Canada did, though, so for the first time since 1986. Anyways, we'll see what happens. But having said that, there was a researcher. Now, what does this have to do with your financial future? Well, let me explain. There's a researcher named Michael Bar-Eli. Michael Bar-Eli. In 2007, according to Doug Rowett, he wrote this very influential paper about this in 2007, and he examined goalkeeper reactions during penalty kicks. So they have to usually make a choice, and it's the overwhelming norm for a goalkeeper to make a decision, a course of action. They're either going to jump to the left or jump to the right. They never stay in the middle of the net, almost never. However, what this guy figured out, Michael Bar-Eli, when he went through the stats, hang on here, he was really shocked. He said, you actually have a much higher probability of stopping the penalty shot if you just do nothing, if you just stay in the middle of the net. Because when you run the stats, when you look at the overall stats, if you jump to the left, you're going to make the save 14.2% of the time. If you jump to the right, you're going to make a save 12.6% of the time. But if you stay in the middle and do nothing, you're going to make the save 33.3% of the time. This is totally counterintuitive, and it's not the way that they usually do it. So the best course of action for a goalie, a soccer goalie, is to take no action, to do nothing, to just stand there. So even though the probability of making the save in the middle, if you just stand there, is much higher, most goalies never do it. They never do it. They always jump one way or the other. Why? Because of their emotions. It's because of their emotional reaction. Because emotionally, we can't handle taking no action. We kind of have this built-in bias towards action. We feel like we have to do something. It's like this lady who called her financial advisor and said, what are you going to do to stop the bleeding here? What's your plan? What action are you going to take? And you can't really feel like, well, I'm not going to do anything. What? You're fired. And so, but actually it might not be a bad play. It's definitely the best play for being a soccer goalie, but it also might be good when it comes to your financial future. If you're watching the numbers drop, if your portfolio is starting to, you go down the other side of the mountain, it may be best not to do anything at all. Because, first of all, if you're losing, it's only a loss on paper until you actually sell it. And then you actually have sold for a loss. So that's making it real. But a lot of people want to do that. They want to do something because it feels better than just taking a wait-and-see approach. But I don't know if you guys know who Charlie Munger is. Charlie Munger was basically, okay, if Warren Buffett is Batman, then Charlie Munger is Robin. Okay, he was his investing partner at Berkshire Hathaway, and we all know Warren Buffett. You know, some time ago he was passed as being the richest man in the world, but the Oracle of Omaha, as he's known, is still obviously a well-sought-after oracle for advice in financial world. But a lot of people discount the advice and the influence of Charlie Munger on Buffett. Well, here's what Charlie Munger said about this constant impulse that we have, this emotional impulse to want to take action all the time and play with our portfolio and make changes and think you can outsmart the market. He said, quote, there's discipline in avoiding just doing any darn thing. Now, he didn't say darn thing. I changed it, but I sanitized it. There's discipline in avoiding doing just any darn thing just because you can't stand inactivity, end of quote. So essentially, what's going on here is he's talking about action bias. So people have a bias towards doing something and try to fix the problem. And they're also overconfident because sometimes people think that they are Warren Buffett, or they think that they're smarter than Warren Buffett, or they figured something out. Hey, my buddy at the gym gave me a stock tip. Oh, I guess he knows what he's talking about. What does he do for a living? You know, not that. All right. So And statistics show that the more you play with your stock portfolio, your investments, maybe you have ETFs, whatever, the more you play with it, stats show that that actually takes away from your performance overall. Very few people really know what they're doing on this front. There was a survey that was done across a large number of U.S. discount brokerage houses during the 1990s. And the people who turned their portfolio over the most, the people who played with it the most, bought and sold the most, and tried to fix things, they actually had an average annual return of 11.4%. But people who never touched it, who just kind of set it and forget it, and, you know, maybe they adjusted it at some points in time, but not all the time. The lowest turnover portfolios had a return of 18.5% on average, much higher. So sometimes when you see red, you know, when the markets are, you know, there's blood on the streets, the best thing you can do is do less or even nothing. And by the way, Buffett did say, one of the most famous quotes of Warren Buffett was, he said, "Be fearful when everybody else is greedy, and be greedy when everybody else is fearful." Now, greed is never good. With apologies to Gordon Gekko, that character played by Michael Douglas in the movie Wall Street. And he said, greed is good. No, greed is never good. It's not good. But we have to be good stewards, right? And sometimes it's when things are down, when the market's down, that's the time to buy because it's cheap. It's on a discount. And people, it's like houses, right? The housing market. You know, there's kind of a housing bubble in certain places. And people think, oh, man, if I don't buy a house now, I'll never be able to afford one. So they buy at the very, very top of the market. And then the bubble starts to burst and then they're underwater. Then the house is not worth as much, but they still owe that $1 million or more on that mortgage, no matter what the house is actually worth now. And so that's the dangerous thing. And so again, disclaimer, this is not financial advice. I don't really know what I'm talking about. I just thought I would would share this with you because that was intriguing. This little post by Doug Rowett, who is a real finance guy, about how soccer goalies can maybe hold the key to this whole thing. Stay centered, my friends. Stay centered. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show after this. 888-914-9149. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
And welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call toll free to talk to me on the Cale Clark Show. We're all about faith, facts, and fun. We talked about faith. We talked about how 2 + 2 = God. If you don't know what I mean by that, you're going to have to check out the first segment. It was a lot of fun on the whole concept of truth and how God is truth. And we can learn that from any field, even math, which I really wasn't that good at or fond of in school. But check that out. You can get the podcast just a few minutes after the show is over. It should be up. Producer Jim will put it up probably within the hour. And so, that's good. And that was kind of our faith segment. And then we just talked about some facts, hopefully, how intriguingly statistics from soccer goalies trying to make saves and penalty kick shootouts can tell us how to avoid getting our shirt handed to us on the markets, which are obviously in the red these days. A lot of people are worried about their financial future. So again, Nick Sendovich, who's working the phone lines for us, he was trying to tease me. He's like, who do you think you are now? Cale Clark, CFP, Certified Financial Planner? Certainly not. And that's why I gave the disclaimer. This is not financial advice by any stretch of the imagination. I do not want Relevant Radio to get sued here. So, but that was an interesting. Now, an actual financial guy wrote this article about this, so I related what I learned from it. Check it out. And here's the fun part. This is a true story. This is a wild true story. You've probably seen the movie. It came out years and years ago. Wow, 22 years ago now. My goodness, time flies. In the year 2000, Castaway with Tom Hanks. Remember that? Remember, he's stranded on a desert island. It's kind of like Robinson Crusoe. He's got this volleyball. It's a Wilson volleyball who he names Wilson. And unfortunately, there's a scene in the movie where he's out on a raft and he loses Wilson at sea. Here's a clip.
Wilson! I'm sorry, Wilson! I'm sorry!
Thank you.
my glory! Wilson!
All right, okay. So I better jump in now. I better cut this off now because producer Jim is—he has a little tear in his eye. He's reaching for the tissue box. That's sorry, Jim. I didn't mean to get you all worked up. I know it was an emotional moment for you, but but believe it or not, there's actually a real life castaway who was saved by a real life Wilson. I'm not making this up. I read about this today. In the Metro publication in the UK, they had an article online about this guy named Ivan, and we don't know what Ivan's last name is. Maybe he just doesn't want to give it, or maybe he's like, I don't know, Cher or something. I'm Ivan. Okay, Ivan. All right, Ivan the Terrible, whatever. Well, this was a terrible thing that happened to him, but there is a happy ending. He was lost at sea. He was, in fact, declared to be lost at sea. Ivan, he's 30 years old. He's from North Macedonia, and he was on vacation in Greece. And, you know, the beautiful Greek islands, he was kind of on the beach there. And he went swimming with a friend, and unfortunately, the powerful currents caught him up, and he got swept out to sea. And that is terrifying. That actually almost happened to me one summer in Long Island. I was visiting some friends who live there, and we went out to the beach, and I can't swim. I'll tell you straight up, I can't swim. I can maybe float. I can kind of dog paddle, not really. And so I went out a little bit too far, and a wave came in, and I went head over heels under the water, and I almost got swept out to the ocean. I was very, very fortunate to find some sort of footing and get back. I almost died there. And so I can imagine how scared this guy must have been. So it turns out he can swim a little bit, thank God. And he was able to somehow survive. And here's how he did it. This is unreal. So after he went missing for a while, friends were like, where's Ivan? You know, and they started calling around. They called the Coast Guard, please. Maybe he got swept out to sea. They tried to find him, but they couldn't. And they declared him to be presumed dead, but he wasn't. He wasn't. You know what happened? A child's volleyball floated towards him in the middle of the ocean. This is just like Castaway. So this ball was kind of half deflated. It wasn't even fully inflated, but he held on to it. And that's the thing that kept him alive. He was at sea for 18 hours straight, and rescuers finally found him. He was pulled out of the water on Sunday, and he's doing much, much better now. Unfortunately, his friend, and his friend's name was Martin Jovanovsky, was also swept out to sea at the same time. He remains missing as of yesterday and is presumably is now alive at this point. So, but who knows, maybe he'll be miraculously found as well. Let's pray for that. But it's crazy. So what happened was two boys were playing on another Greek island. It was the island of Lemnos. And this is like their favorite ball. They were playing with it on the beach, and then one of them threw it into the water, and unfortunately it drifted off to sea, and the kids were all mad at each other. You lost my ball. You know how kids are. And so they were just really upset. The mom was like, okay, we'll get another ball. Don't worry about it. They went home. That ball drifted 80 miles in the ocean to the east of the island of Lemnos, and that's where Ivan found it in the water, and that's what kept him alive. So this ball traveled 80 miles, this real-life Wilson, if you will, and that's what enabled Ivan to survive. So this is all over the place. In Greece, in the Greek media, they're covering this nonstop. There's a photo of him posing with the volleyball. His dad is there. The mayor of the town is there. This is all over the place. And so this is on the news. And so the mom of the two boys who lost the ball, she was just kind of watching the news one night. She was like, wait a minute, that's my kid's ball that they lost at the beach the other day. And so she could not believe it. It was 10 days before the accident that the kids lost the ball. And the two brothers, their names are Tryphon and Thanos. It's not the same guy who tried to destroy the universe in the Marvel movies. Don't worry. He's only 6 years old, Thanos. So Thanos is 6. His brother Tryphon is 11. And they were playing with the ball on Evgatis Beach on the Greek island of Lemnos on June the 30th. And that's when the sea swept it away. So you can imagine how those kids must have felt when they saw this story. I mean, they were probably distraught when they lost their ball, and that was like the end of the world for them. But imagine how amazed they are now that that little ball saved this guy's life, saved Ivan's life. So, man, you just, the providence of that occurrence. And you think, well, what about the other guy who died? Where's the providence in his life, in his death? And that's the thing that's tough to explain. And I thought, oh, maybe I won't tell him about the other guy who died, you know, but that is part of the story. I have to full disclosure, tell you that too. But I'm also a firm believer that, you know, not only does God have a plan for our lives, but I really do feel like the whole thing about when is it your time to go? We could do a whole show on that. But I really do believe that when we die, when we leave this world, when we step into eternity, that's the optimal time for us. Because God knows the future. He knows what we would have done if we were still alive. Maybe the friend who died, you know, I was talking about this with my wife. We were having supper before the show, and she's saying, well, you never know. Maybe this guy was struggled with alcohol, and maybe he liked to drink and drive. And who knows? Maybe if he had lived, he would have struck a van killing a family or something like that. One maybe a worse tragedy, you know, would have happened. Who knows? But or maybe he would have turned away from God. Maybe at that point he was in a state of grace, and maybe his heart was about to be turned to a grave evil, and he never would have gone back to the Lord. I don't know. Only God knows the answers to those questions. We're getting into some deep waters here, no pun intended, because you think, well, hang on here. What people who don't make it to heaven, you know, how is it the optimal time for them to die if they don't die in a state of grace? Well, don't forget, things could always be worse, because there are degrees of punishments in the afterlife as well as degrees of beatitude and degrees of blessing. People's experiences in eternity are not the same. Our Lady has more glory in heaven than the other saints, deservedly so. Now, we're all going to be happy in heaven, don't get me wrong. That's why Jesus said the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John the Baptist, and he's the greatest guy who ever lived. So, other than him, of course, but having said that, we've always got to keep that in mind. So that's the mystery, but just the providence that these kids lose this volleyball, it winds up saving this guy's life. I'm sure he's asking that question. He has half a brain. He's asking the question, okay, why am I here? Does God have a purpose for me? And the answer is yes, he does. Same purpose he has for everybody else, to become a saint and help other people to do that as well. That's the bottom line. That's why we're baptized, to become a saint and to help other people become saints. Holiness and apostolate, holiness and evangelism. That's what it's all about. You're listening to The K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Hey, I got to tell you this. Our good friend Patrick Madrid sent this over to me. Again, study after study, the Brain Trust at Relevant Radio is always hammering this into us as show hosts. You got to tell the people to tell their friends about the shows, because study after study shows that people find out about Relevant Radio, most of all, through word of mouth. Yeah, you can spend a ton of money advertising, but most people find out through word of mouth, people telling their friends. So if you like the show, hop onto social media, tell your friends about the K.O. Clark Show, about the Faith Explained, about all the other programs we have on Relevant Radio. One of them is the Patrick Madrid Show. There's also the Drew Mariani Show. There's so many shows, right? Trending with Tim Marie. There's Father Simon Says, Love Father Simon, The Inner Life with Josh Raymond, Family Rosary Across America, of course, coming up later. It's one of our tentpole shows, of course, with Father Rocky. The Holy Mass, that's the biggest show that we have every day. It's the most important thing that happens in the world every day, the Holy Mass. All kinds of things. Morning Error. If you go onto the app, they're all there. You can check them out. And you can download them as well and share them. So whatever your favorites are, do it. So Patrick Madrid sent me this message, and he was scouring the internet, as he often does, and he went on to the website called Reddit. There's all these Reddits, you know, these Reddit trails, these subreddits, all this sort of stuff. And Patrick sent me a message. It was a post from Reddit, and it was a Reddit user who calls himself True Christian. So True Christian said this on the website Reddit. Just give me one second here. So True Christian wrote on Reddit, I want to share with you one of my favorite new things in the world, Catholic Radio, or more specifically, Relevant Radio. They also have a mobile app and a host of shows that you guys might enjoy, especially the Patrick Madrid Show. Imagine a 3-hour program of talk radio, just taking calls and talking about whatever through a Christian lens. You guys will love it. Do yourselves a favor. They also have a program called The Cake Clark Show. The Cake Clark Show. Okay. I think he means me, but don't trust me. I've been called worse. The Kate Clark Show. Maybe we should change the name to that. It might be more popular. I don't know. It's a sweet show, folks. It's the Kate Clark Show. And that's probably, this has happened to me a ton of times. Whenever I try to type in my name, it autocorrects to cake. Kale, C-A-L-E, autocorrects to cake all the time. So much so that my wife actually changed that in her phone settings. So now, like, she actually can't write cake because, and this is bad, when she actually wants to order a cake, she can't do it. She winds up ordering a bunch of leafy green vegetables, ordering a bunch of kale. Misspelled, of course. But anyway, so that's what this guy said on Reddit. He said they have a program called the Cake Clark Show. It's basically a Bible study type program. It might be more talking about maybe the faith explained there. But anyways, the Drew Mariani Show, which covers news and events. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. There are no bad people on the network. That's what he said, something else, but I can't repeat it. There's no fire and brimstone preachers going on a rant, just solid Christian and biblical programming. So that was according to the Reddit user known as True Christian. So thank you very much for that. Thanks for telling people about our shows here on Relevant Radio. And I'll tell you this also. Tomorrow on the Faith Explained program, speaking of Bible study, we're going to look at the book of Jonah. I told you on the Cale Clark Show about a real life Jonah, a Massachusetts fisherman who was swallowed by a whale, and he actually lived to tell the tale. It's a true story. A lot of people think Jonah's not a true story. Well, I'm not so sure about that, but check out the Jonah series tomorrow on the Faith Explained at 12:30 Central. Jesus talked about it. He said, hey, I'm going to give you the sign of Jonah, the resurrection. That really happened. Whew, lots to talk about, so I can't wait for that. And I can't wait to join you once again tomorrow right here for the Cale Clark Show. Now it's Cale Clark Show. And Nick Sentovich took your phone calls. Jim Shaper produced admirably as always. See you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.